Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Let's go stack guts combat. Odds. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Anybody got football hangover? Anybody wish that we could have a do-over from this last weekend? Holy moly. Welcome inside the playbook here on Patriots.com radio for Tuesday. My name is John Rook. Wow is about all I can say. Wow. I know that many of you have already had your chance to get your thoughts in one way or the other on the game. We'll continue with some of that thought process as well here on the program today. This is obviously a bye week for the Patriots, and I guess it really couldn't have come at a better time, could it? Sure, that's probably been discussed as well. I mean, let's face it. I don't remember seeing a game like that for quite some time. I'm not even sure that I remember seeing a game like that since something that was that completely abysmal. I would have to say that we'd have to come back maybe more to the Rod Rust era of this franchise. It's been a long time since we've seen a game like we saw in that 38-13 debacle on Sunday here at Gillette Stadium. Normally, many of you, as those of you who are familiar with the program, normally you know that on Tuesdays, I call it Nitpick Tuesdays. This is why we kind of, do what we do. We run through it just for the sake of nitpicking and trying to decide what could be better, what could be worked on, areas of improvements, things we like, things we didn't like in particular about the previous week's game. And we kind of turned it into Nitpick Tuesdays because, quite frankly, when you're in the midst of a 21-game regular season win streak, there's just not a lot to complain about. Now, maybe that's a little bit different. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to call it Rant and Rave Tuesday. Now, I don't know. But for Nitpick Tuesday, obviously, there are a lot of things that we can get into. I think that what we'll probably do is, first of all, make sure you know the email address. It's webradio@patriots.com. Same email address as PFW Progress, webradio@patriots.com. That's how you reach us. Telephone number is 508-543-7482. That's area code 508-543-7482. That's how you reach us on the program. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today, and of course the fantasy lowdown. That's what he calls it. He's going to join us. Lowdown.
Fantasy lowdown.
Okay, that's right.
Fan load to seed the...
Yeah, exactly. All right, so he'll be joining us in the 3 o'clock hour today, as he normally does on Tuesdays. I have to admit, I'll give you my nitpick. I had a lot to choose from, okay, and I think we all did. But there were a couple of things that stood out to me as particularly shocking. That was out of character, not only for the team, but just out of character, you know, for the individuals involved. I have to admit, I mean, I'm still kind of going through it in my own head thinking, how the heck did this happen? And I'm sure you have probably tried to rationalize that in your own mind as well. How the heck did this happen? And I think what we had was just an utter and complete total breakdown of everything on offense and on defense, and the only thing that went well was Ellis Hobbs in the kicking return game and the return game in special teams, and yet he was only able to set the franchise record because of all the chances that he had. I mean, you're not going to set a record like that, generally speaking, unless you're returning a lot of kicks, right? So, you know, I don't even know if you can call that a bright spot, to be honest with you. Although he did look good when he was returning the ball, but it was just it was a wow is all it was. The biggest thing that I had a problem with, there are two things. Okay? I'm going to share two things with you. And our email question today is going to have to do with one of them, because it's a subject that we've talked about on this program in previous years, but we were in the midst of winning. And I'm not about to suggest here, I'm not about to suggest that we're on the verge of a tailspin. I don't think so. Now, this team is still good enough to compete, still good enough to win this division. Ultimately, time will prove whether or not we're correct with that assessment. But, I mean, I don't know how you can go from basically being, you know, a fluke play or two away from being a Super Bowl one year, winning a Super Bowl champion one year, and being a non-playoff team the next with largely the same personnel. And in theory, where you were really the worst off in the linebacking core, you got younger and more athletic. So how can you be worse off? Anyway. Nitpick number one, and then I want you to share your nitpicks. Obviously, on Nitpick Tuesday, share with me your nitpicks at webradio@patriots.com. Pick one. Pick the one thing that bothered you the most about Sunday, okay? Right off the bat, pick one thing about Sunday that bothered you the most. I'm going to spend today kind of looking back on not only this game, but, you know, the 21-game streak and some of the things leading up to the events of Sunday. And then starting tomorrow, that's behind us. And we got a bye week to worry about, and we'll probably normally on bye weeks we take a chance to take an opportunity to look around with other things around the league. So we're going to look at some things within the division now that the Patriots apparently are in a bit of a race, certainly with Buffalo, who will play twice this year. But we'll take a look at some things within the division and within the conference in particular during the bye week here. And then, of course, next week we'll begin to catch up on the Pats and how they might fare against the San Francisco 49ers, who in their own right are a little bit of a surprise, off to a 2-1 start. So anyway, you got to pick one thing that really bothered you the most about Sunday as your nitpick of the week here on Nitpick Tuesday, and send it to me, webradio@patriots.com. And I've got two that I'm going to share with you. It might be the same as you, but and even if it is, I want you to share it with me anyway. Please do so. Number one has to be the fact that the Patriots were ultimately rendered defenseless against the single-wing formation that Miami ran. I mean, you know, they put Ronnie Brown back there to take the direct snap, and he just gouged the Patriots up the middle. What's the linebacker? What's the middle linebacker assignment on that particular play? It just boggled my mind. And then to hear Coach Belichick say in yesterday's news conference that they had practiced that. Because they kind of expected it from the Jets, and they'd run that with Washington before in the past. So they had actually practiced that, and to see it out there on the field look completely and totally clueless, it just blew me away. They practiced it. They were aware, maybe, that Miami could run it, and yet they were clueless on Sunday. Clueless. I thought it was an outstanding play. It's a throwback to, you know, 1930s, 40s, and 50s football, when teams ran single-wing formations. They put their best athlete in particular at the quote-unquote quarterback position. You know, put him in a shotgun, direct snap, run with the ball. Very simple. There's nothing fancy about it. What the Miami Dolphins did was is they overloaded the line of scrimmage by putting both tackles on the same line and overloaded one side in an effort to get your best blockers in front of your best athlete. And they just mauled the Patriots. I was stunned by the simplicity of the play and the formation and the ineptitude that the Patriots showed in defending it. Stunned. What did they do in practice last week? Absolutely stunned. I don't know any other way to say it. So that's my chief football, if you will, nitpick, because they just seemed ill-prepared, and you have not been able to say that about the Patriots very often, if at all, under this coaching regime since 2000. The one thing that you have the one thing that you've always been able to say, the one constant you've been able to bring that the Patriots have brought to the table is the fact that this team is always prepared for its opponent. They scout, they film study, they game plan as well as any team maybe ever has in the history of the modern NFL. That you could put, you know, the mortgage on. And yet this week they were as unprepared as I have ever seen the Patriots. Now, I'm wondering if it was more so the Patriots being unprepared, or maybe it was a little bit, you know, how the Dolphins just sort of threw caution to the wind and said, all right, we're going to try a little something with the game plan this week, and we're going to see if it works because we really don't have anything else to lose. You know, this season's pretty much a wash, and we know it. I have to admit, I like that swashbuckling cavalier attitude that Miami showed. It's kind of like, hey, we're going to run this stuff. We're going to have some fun doing it. Maybe we can have some success, but we're going to do it differently. We're going to do it our way. We're going to dictate to you. And I think that's one of the things that bothered me the most, is that the Dolphins imposed their will on this football team. And usually it's the other way around. That's why this is a shocking change of character for this team, this program, this organization, you know, this football club, this everything. It's a shocking turn of events. I don't, again, pretend to believe that it is signaling a downward spiral. Although, I guess, like I said earlier, it's possible that the next few weeks could end up dictating that. But I don't believe we're headed that direction. You know, I think we all realize that maybe this is just a blip on the radar screen, and that potentially we'll see this team get healthier in a hurry because of the overall strength of schedule that they have, which is not terribly strong. Well, you know, again, time will tell that as well. I mean, San Francisco's off to 2-1 start, and, you know, Buffalo's 3-0, and you still got to play them twice. The other thing that really bothers me about Sunday's loss, and this isn't necessarily a nitpick, but the other thing that really bothers me with the loss is the fact that it came in the division. So now you're really behind the eight ball when you go down and play in Miami in December. You need to win that game. You need to win that game. You're 1-1 in the division. It's good that you won on the road, you know, at the Jets, but you lost at home to a team that you should have beaten. You were expected to beat, and you didn't do it for whatever reason. Whether you were ill-prepared or the other team just threw caution to the wind and blew you away with their game plan, you didn't get the job done. And I think that's kind of what stuns us all the most. The other nitpick that I want to share here with you, and this is another question that I have for you that I'd love for you to answer today as far as our question of the day here on web radio at patriots.com. The Boston newspapers, in particular the Herald, has written over the last few days about, comments from Ellis Hobbs in particular. You probably know where I'm going with this, about how the fans were booing, and I know you guys have talked a little bit about that. But do you feel as if Patriots fans are spoiled? I don't want you to give me what you think everybody else thinks. I want to know what you personally think. What do you personally think? Are you spoiled by the Patriots' run of success over the last several years? Could it be that the fans were spoiled? I mean, I have to admit, I fully expected, when the game was over, I fully expected the fans to boo. And maybe I'm conditioned to it a little bit more. I can't say that I was terribly surprised by it. Then again, it hasn't been, I mean, you know, I remember when fans used to boo regularly at Foxborough. Many of you probably remember that as well. For some of the younger players on this team and in this organization, that was a new experience, Hobbs being one of them. So I'm not entirely surprised that they seemed to be taken aback by that. But I think the smart player, the seasoned, the veteran player realizes that my guess would be they get it, that, you know, you're only as good as your last game. And so, you know, they probably just choose not to say anything publicly about it. But the younger players are saying something about it. And so it's a simple question. Do you personally believe that Patriots fans are spoiled? And my answer to that is there's no doubt. That's an absolute, unequivocal yes. Patriots fans are spoiled, rotten brats. for the most part. Some of you are spoiled by success. Not everybody. I consider, you know, our group here, those of you that listen to this program regularly and tune in, Patriots.com radio, and contribute to PFW in Progress and all that stuff here, I consider us, you know, the hardcore, you know, pretty much. We really want our Patriots fixed. We want to talk about the news that the team is making. Yeah, we like to have fun with it, but we do some, you know, interesting things here around the football program, but it's still all about the football team here. And I would say some of you undoubtedly are spoiled by this success. Maybe you're even willing to say that. Hey, John, I've been spoiled by this team's success. And frankly, I have a right to boo. I pay a lot of money or what have you. And so there you go. That's how I feel about it. Okay, that's fine. I would love to hear that point of view if one exists out there. If you find the fact that the fans and thousands of them that were remaining in the stands at the end of the game, if you find what they did detestful, classless, clueless, that's fine too. I'd like to hear from you. I suppose that I'm a little ambivalent about it. I found it odd, yet I expected it because I remember how Patriots fans have been through the decades. It was odd because we haven't heard it for a while. And people don't realize that, you know, things change. People change. Teams change. Personnel changes. Nothing ever stays the same. This team, this organization has put up remarkably, consistently strong numbers and effort throughout the course of this decade. And even if they fall flat on their face this year and next, there's no doubt in my mind the Patriots are still the team of the decade. Nobody else is going to top that, at least in this particular decade. And I don't think that's going to happen. I still think they've got a few years left in this run. That's my own personal opinion. But, you know, we saw a little how the other half lived on Sunday. And I guess that was the most interesting part of it. I didn't like it. Nobody had any fun here on Sunday. There's no doubt about that. But it was just an interesting observation in character and human interest and everything else to see that, you know what, they love you 1 minute, but when you throw a stinker up there, they're gonna hate on you in the next. Is that unfair? Some undoubtedly would say that is unfair. Some fans would say that's unfair. I don't necessarily think that smart fans would say that. I just say some fans would say that's unfair. Others who, you know, have a higher sense of expectation, maybe those who, you know, pay a lot of money. After all, it's a professional game. It's an expensive sport. These guys make a lot of money. If they don't put up an effort like that, if I put up an effort like that on the job on one particular day, you know, I could get my butt canned. Well, that's true, I suppose, depending on what you do for a living. I suppose that's true. But you can't fire, you know, 53 players. I don't think anybody's ready to dump Coach Belichick just yet. I actually think that I have a solution. I don't know that it would cure all of the problems. In fact, I will admit right here that it could create more problems than it's worth, but I kind of feel like you need a little something-something. You know, you need a little jump start. You need a little kickstart. You need a little something to help give this team an edge. And, you know, I've talked so often, and these guys, this team, and the media around here, they've talked so often about this team creating their own edge, their own motivation. This team is good at putting the old boulder on the shoulder. And we thought that maybe a guy like Joey Porter, thank you, Joey, you know, opening his mouth last week, would, you know, certainly be enough. And the fact that most national media, especially outside of this region, continues to downplay the Patriots and say that they're done and that, you know, they're not going to even win the division. They may not get into the playoffs this year because of the loss of Tom Brady. And we thought that that might be enough. What I think that this Sunday's game will show you is that these guys, these players on this team, don't look at it like that. These players, I feel like if they get hit over the head by the same thing often enough, that I think that they'll group together, they'll band together as brothers or what have you, as teammates, and they'll come together and play for the cause and do well. But I think when you get head over the head so much, after a while you become numb to it all. And I'm wondering if maybe this team failed to seize the emotional opportunity presented to it through the disrespecting in the media and through the words of Joey Porter last week. And it's kind of like, ah, here we go again. No big deal. Let's just do our job. And they really didn't get the emotional charge that they've received in the past from similar situations. What do you think about that particular assessment? Accurate, inaccurate? I don't think the team took advantage of the situation that presented itself to them last week. So because of that, I think this team does need a little bit of a shakeup. I think the one thing that would cure some of the ills right now, if, of course, there are still ills to be cured. So as they've looked at the videotape over the last couple of days, this team, I think somebody should lose their job. Cut somebody. Kick them out. Or bring somebody in. Something that would cause a stir, a buzz, cause players to be on their toes, cause players to be sitting on the edge of their seats, cause players to be looking over their shoulders like, oh, what's he going to do next? Just a little something to create uncertainty, apprehension, you know, even a little stress, if you will. Something to get the heart rate pounding a little bit. Something to get guys to operate with a sense of urgency, not only on game day, but in their everyday practice efforts. And I'm going to go back to something we talked about 2 weeks ago in our opening week here. I think if they could make a deal for Jeff Garcia, they should do it. This is not meant as being disrespectful to Matt Cassel. I think we all realize that, you know, Tom Brady was only 5-3 in his first 8 starts as a Patriots quarterback, okay? So let's keep that in mind as we look at Matt Cassel, who's now 1-1. Tom Brady did not start out like the Tom Brady we know now. But then again, we didn't think that the team was really built to go anywhere in 2001, did we? This team is built to go somewhere. This team, as I said earlier, was only a flute play away from being a four-time Super Bowl champ in the last 7 years. This team still has the pieces of the puzzle in place. And I think I saw enough on Sunday on some of the throws that Cassel missed when trying to bring this team back. I mean, they were bad throws, way off the mark. Fact is that the book on Matt Cassel is that when he releases the ball is to jump, because he has at least 2 or 3 passes every game batted down at the line of scrimmage. Now, I'm not saying bring in somebody who's 6'6". What I'm saying is that a veteran presence, someone, and this is kind of disappoints me about the team. I'm digressing here, but disappoints me a little bit about Josh McDaniels, and the quarterbacks not recognizing this. Have they not worked with Matt Cassel to improve his arm angle so he doesn't have passes like that batted down at the line of scrimmage? He comes in low. He's a big boy. He should be able to get over the top of these guys. Anyway, is Jeff Garcia the answer? Maybe not. But the one thing I know that Jeff Garcia has is he's got veteran experience. He's got playmaking ability. He generally seems to be respected around the league. Although, I don't know about you, but I guess the one thing that bothers me is that he seems to have a short stay no matter where he goes. I don't know if it's because teams keep finding better options than him. Here's a great way for either A, him to go out on a high note, because he's got a team here in New England that's built to win now. Or he's got a chance now to rehab his quote-unquote playing rep if he's hoping to work for another couple of years after this. You know, the Patriots are going to have to look for another backup quarterback next year anyway, so they're just basically renting the guy for the rest of the year, as they would be with Matt Cassel. I mean, keep in mind now, Matt Cassel, this is the last year of his deal. He won't be back next year. He's banking on having this opportunity to propel him to a starting job somewhere else in the NFL. It won't be here. And he won't stay here for the same $300,000 a year or whatever it is he's making as a backup either. And nor would I blame him. The Patriots will be in the market for a backup next year. And maybe Kevin O'Connell will move into that role, and maybe they'll, you know, and maybe they'll, you know, bring up, you know, Gutierrez, and they'll draft a quarterback next year. Maybe, who knows? Who knows? But that's next year. What I'm saying is that, you know, you've got a perfect scenario here. What could you get Jeff Garcia for? A two, a three, a four? Patriots make it a habit of stockpiling picks in those rounds for things just like this. Now, I realize that, you know, the common argument against something like that is, well, he wouldn't have enough time to come in and learn the playbook. And he wouldn't, how effective could he be, you know, when guys like Cassel and O'Connell and Gutierrez know the playbook, and yet we get out of them what we get out of them. Well, okay, that probably has some validity to it. You know, I heard somebody say on the radio locally here earlier today that, well, look at Brett Favre and what he's doing with the Jets. And, you know, here we are, you know, he's basically 6 weeks into the process as the Jets quarterback, and he still doesn't know 100% of the playbook. That's fine, okay? I got two plays for you. Randy Moss deep and Wes Walker short. There you go. What else do you need to know? Oh, hand the ball off to the running back. There's another one. Oh, here's another one. Scramble. Because he can do it. Now, yeah, I think Matt Cassel probably has some ability to do that too. But this is what Jeff Garcia has made his name on and his reputation on. He's a mobile quarterback that can make things happen. He's a veteran. He has the ability to take a team on his shoulders and move them down the field. I think he would command instant respect in the huddle. I think you would, if you think that Randy Moss is frustrated, and you're sensing, like it seems like everybody else in the football world right now is sensing, that he's on the verge of snapping or going back to the old Randy. This, I believe, or something to this effect, would cure that. Because everybody understands this is a short-term project. And it would inject a little something-something. Come on, am I right or am I wrong here? I need to hear from you on that. Webradio@patriots.com. And the telephone number is 508-543-7482. So I've got several things on the agenda today. Your nitpick of the week. Pick one. There's a ton of them. What bothered you the most? What bothered you the most about Sunday's debacle? Okay, that's number one. Number two, are Patriots fans spoiled? Are they truly spoiled in the truest sense of the word? That's number two. And number three, what do you think of my idea about how to inject a little energy into the locker room and the football team? You either bring in a guy like Garcia or you cut somebody. Who would you cut after last week's performance? And you can't say the whole damn team. You can't. That's not fair. Look at it from an analytical point of view. Look at the performances that were put out on the field, and who would you cut? You either add somebody or you cut somebody to grab their attention. You grab them by the shirt collar and you shake them two or three times and say, "Yo, we got something going on here. It's time to pay attention." So what do you think? There you go. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Giving you a lot to chew on. So we'll get to some of the emails that you've sent in over the last 20 minutes or so. We'll also recap some of the emails that we didn't get to from PFW in Progress earlier today. And Brian Lowe from Patriots Today will be joining us in hour number two, right inside the playbook.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs, and coming soon to
the Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene Restaurant and Bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna here. Let me tell you about the game with the greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching a game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the Game with the Greats on October 5th at Gillette Stadium. Watch the Patriots take on the 49ers in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me and a bunch of other Patriot alumni. Guys like newly inducted Hall of Famer Andre Tippett and Patriots Hall of Famers Ben Coates, Stanley Morgan, Steve Nelson, and Steve Grogan will be there. Tickets are limited because they're only $40. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on Alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the Game with the Greats. Where will you be?
Inside the Playbook for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Web radio at Patriots.com. That's the email address. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. Kerry's going to rock out a little bit here. Running with the devil? Did we run with the devil or we run against the devil on Sunday? I can't figure that one out. You think Bill Parcells had any fun at all? Watching the game? You think he watched the game, or was he watching Ryder Cup golf? I don't know. I just have to share this with you.
Here from the party.
Yes, I think I did. I have to share this with you because this was left in our email inbox. This was sent to us approximately 30 minutes after the conclusion of the game on Sunday. And Peter, I won't give his last name because I really don't want to embarrass him, but Peter, who says in the subject line, Dolphin fan, to Web Radio, he says, it's your time to loose now. L-O-O-S-E. Go Dolphins. Get ready for 10 years of loosing. L-O-O-S-I-N-G. Pats suck. That's what he said after the game. So I just wanted to let Peter know. Peter, it's lose. L-O-S-E. Not double O-S-E. Who's the moron now? Walter, since this, again, this is actually from Monday. Yeah. Where do we go from here? The Pats looked foolish. They were chasing. They looked old. What do you do when you come into a game not knowing what the other team is going to do? They never manned up and took people out of the roots. What's next? I think that was a prevailing
unlucky
feeling. Unlucky? No.
Unlucky.
I don't know if it was just unlucky. I'm willing to say though at this stage of the game that it might have been an aberration, and that you know obviously the loss is still kind of fresh in Walter's mind in particular. What's next? You go back to work.
Unlucky.
What's next? You review the film and you try to prepare a little bit better and you try to play with a little bit more of an edge than these guys played with on Sunday. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Jeff in Connecticut wanted to ask how come the offensive line is not getting any negative feedback. They've been awful going back to the Super Bowl. Also, to know the team is saying, or I know the team is saying that they are bigger than one man, but let's face it, Tom Brady made that team go. The defense is old, they really are, and for Richard Seymour to say that defense wins championships, and it was always about defense, they would not have won anything with Bledsoe at quarterback. Also, the media needs to leave
Jackpot.
Randy's comments alone.
Jackpot.
And stop trying to stir it up. I can just hope Tom Brady is in contact with Randy Moss and tells him he will be back and we will get you a ring. Well, I would agree, I think, that the media does need to kind of stop stirring it up a little bit. But let's face it, Randy did this himself through years of, that's a good way to put it, through years of action. I mean, you are what you are. You know, I mean, a snake sheds his skin only once every, 5 years or so, right? You still are what you are. He's coming here. He's a captain on this year's team. Again, until I see it happen and until we get physical or audible evidence of it happening, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But you have to understand how the media is looking at it. Media's looking at it. Oh, you know, Randy, when he came into this league, he was a malcontent. He was saying this, doing that. I mean, all that kind of stuff, right? So, you know, they'd be remiss if they didn't, you know, ask the question at the very least. Now, as far as the defense being old, I really kind of beg to differ. They went out and got a lot younger this year. In fact, they have four rookies in the two deep this last week. The two deep. Okay, that's first and second string. Four rookies were in there. And, of course, obviously a starter in Gerard Mayo at linebacker. So there's four rookies, four younger players, four brand new players that were not a part of any rotation last year, four players that are getting significant playing time, at least on the defensive side of the football. So they may be veterans, but I think that's an inaccurate assessment of the Patriots defense. I heard Mike Ditka, of all people, say that on the radio this morning on ESPN. He said, well, the Patriots defense is getting old. Look at the roster! Look at the players. Look at the film. You can say, well, they're not covering sideline to sideline. You can say they're a half a step slow. But don't use the phrase old. Because they're just not. It's not like everybody has the experience of Teddy Bruschi. Teddy Bruschi, okay, I will give you, he and Rodney Harrison are on the south side of the 50, baby. Let's put it that way. Both of those guys. And those guys would admit it. But they've still got enough gas left in the tank to be effective. Now, if you had a team full of those guys, okay, you could say old. But, you know, Mike Vrabel might be pushing it as well, but he's still what, 31, 32 years old? Or is he up to 33 now? I'd have to look at it because I don't have it right here in front of me. And he's talked about this being his last year anyway, to no one in particular, or to everyone in particular. So maybe two guys, maybe three guys, but they've more than offset that by having rookies, four of them, as I said, in the two-deep rotation. The team looked horrible. It wasn't Matt Cassel on Sunday. He was only part of the problem. But he was not the biggest problem. The defensive play and defensive effort was the biggest problem on Sunday. The inability to stop, as I mentioned in my original nitpick today, the defense's inability to stop the creativeness of Miami's offense was a huge problem. The old single-wing direct snap to the running back. Couldn't stop it. It's like they'd never seen it. That was the problem. Josh from York, Maine, sent something I think that was also fairly representative of a lot of the feelings, at least within the first 24 hours or so after the game. He says, it seems like everyone's so down on Castle after Sunday's game, even though the loss wasn't really his fault. Yeah, he could have played better, but the defense lost the game. Thank you, Josh. Anyway, everyone seems to forget what when Brady stepped in, he was just asked to manage games too. It might interest some people to know that both Brady and Castle made their second career starts against the Dolphins. Brady was 12 of 24, 86 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, a QB rating of 58.7, and a 30-10 loss. Castle was 19-31 for 131, one TD, one pick, and a QB rating of 68.1. in a 38-13 loss. Now, I'm not trying to say Castle's going to be better than Brady, but I think it's a little premature to start panicking. Also, Brady didn't throw his first TD pass until the next week against the Chargers. Okay, good comparison. That's why I wanted to read it. I still think, though, you got to shake this team up. This team is built better now than the team was in 2001 when Tom Brady took over for Drew Bledsoe. A veteran presence, someone that the guys can believe in, whether you believe in him or not, someone the guys in the locker room, especially the receivers, i.e. Randy Moss, can believe in, that may be what's needed right now. Either that, or you just cut somebody. The Turk comes in late, and he whacks somebody from this roster that nobody expected coming. Then you create that edge again. And I think that's what this team needs. They need to get that edge back. I thought they would get it for sure this past Sunday. Apparently, Joey Porter's mouth is not big enough to give the Patriots an edge. Jay, near Rochester, New York, says, I know it's Nitpick Tuesday, John, and while there's a lot of nits to pick, I want to touch on the one positive that I saw last weekend. Ellis Hobbs' kick returns were the only bright spot in a very bad game for our team, and I think that he deserves to be mentioned. One big nit that I want to pick has nothing to do with players or the coaches. It is the fans that booed the team going into halftime. As good as this team has been for the past 7 years and the quality team style game they play, I think that they have earned the right to have a bad game against a team and quarterback that always seemed to find a way to cause trouble for them. I had season tickets in the late 80s and early 90s, and this is what we saw most weeks for seasons at a time. Appreciate how good you have it, people, because it won't last forever. A true fan enjoys the good times but can weather the bad as well. I wore our colors as proudly back then as I wear them today, and I will until they cremate me someday in my Patriots T-shirt. Jay, that's an excellent email. I thank you for sending it, and I share those feelings. It's an excellent email. So I guess he's kind of answered both of the email questions in a sense. The nitpick, yes, although he gave props to Ellis Hobbs, and B, yeah, Patriots fans are spoiled. And not only did they boo at the end of the game, he is right. They initially let the chorus of boos go at halftime as the team was walking or running off the field. I thought that was also a bit strange. But again, not entirely out of, old Patriot fan character. Mike in Pensacola, Florida. I was watching the game on Sunday, even though the defense had a horrible game overall. I thought that Vrabel and Thomas had bad games. It seems like they're just a step away from getting to the quarterback and that it's just enough for the quarterback to make a play, which usually a big play ends up hurting us and keeps our D on the field. That's a great point, Mike. I saw that probably a half a dozen times as well on Sunday. Vrabel and Thomas were right there, and then somehow Chad Pennington, who is always, as our previous emailer suggested, Jay, Chad Pennington's always had good games against the Patriots. He's always managed to make the Patriots squirm when he was the quarterback of the Jets. And I think he did a magnificent job on Sunday. He had nothing to lose. Their game plan was perfect. He just has that knack to sit up in the pocket and scramble. He got out of, one. And, of course, by the way, I think that, speaking of getting out of, that call against Matt Castle was butchered. But, could it have changed the complexion of the game? Well, it might have, but it would have given the Patriots a 7-0 lead. But, frankly, I'm not sure it would have changed the end result. So, Mike also says he can't believe that Troy Brown that Fred Kirsch doesn't think that Troy Brown's a lock for the Patriot Hall of Fame. He's as deserving as anyone currently in the Pats Hall of Fame. Kevin Falk's in doubt of getting in, too, because I think he gets in. I don't know about Kevin Falk, but I would think that Troy Brown is a lock. I don't know why Fred thinks otherwise, but I think he's a lock. What's that? I can't hear you.
We actually cleared that up. Fred is now in agreement with us.
Oh, he is in agreement now? Okay. Yeah, because we discussed that last week when I came in at a crossover with the guys, too. And I think we kind of convinced Fred that Troy Brown should be a lock. Okay, next email. This one comes from Tony in Greenwich, Connecticut.
And lo and behold, here comes Fred.
I'm a distressed Pats fan. After last week's win against the Jets, I had envisions that maybe the season won't be as bad as I thought the previous week. Then this. There are a couple of things that stand out like a sore thumb about the club. One, the offensive line is marginal at best. Tom Brady, with his impeccable pocket presence and quick decision-making, made this line look better than it was. Tom Brady's the reason the three of them went to the Pro Bowl. How many times do we have to see Nick Kazzer run around or run through for a sack? It happens every game. Logan Mankins is still having Justin Tuck flashbacks because I've seen him beaten badly, and it seems like every game now. Mankins did get pounded a couple of times, in fact, on Sunday. In fact, I believe the first two sacks that I saw Castle go down on Mankins was the player that got beat on the offensive line. He says, the Pats have to reevaluate this line and then seriously upgrade the talent and athleticism. They're not that good, bottom line. Tell you what, I think they actually missed Stephen Neal. Because even though Stephen Neal was a relative football neophyte, I think his athleticism as a wrestler is what endeared the Patriots to him. And I think they missed that, that toughness and that athleticism on the offensive line. I would tend to agree with that assessment. He also says, Tony says, it's time to sit Teddy Bruschi. He's been a great warrior and playmaker, but he can't cover me. And on Sunday, I saw him as the last line of defense to Ronnie Brown's last touchdown run. Bruschi was there to make the tackle for a marginal gain, went to cut Brown's legs out from under him, and Brown ran right through his block. Bruschi bounced off of him like a rag doll. Dolphins spread the Pats out, exposed their lack of speed and athleticism. That deficiency starts with 54. I say, play Guyton. He's bigger and faster. You have nothing to lose. I'm back to being very concerned about what this team can do this year. If the defense doesn't have a big year, it's going to be a long year. Alex says he's not happy. The way Castle stood in the pocket waiting to be sacked reminded me of a former Patriots quarterback that Paul Perillo is particularly fond of. Who, Bledsoe?
You were horrible.
Okay, fair enough. Joel, well, that was certainly an interesting game, wouldn't you say? Looked like lots of people were having fun playing. Unfortunately, none of them were wearing Patriots uniforms. He says, we stink, we're abysmal, but there is hope. The world could end tomorrow and we wouldn't have to watch any more Ronnie Brown highlights. What happened? Let me put it in Rodney's words. We were surprised, or maybe Seymour's words, we weren't prepared for that. Surprised? Not prepared? How many times do you hear those words coming from the mouths of Belichick players? Once, twice? I can understand. But six times? And the trick formations didn't bother me as much as the gaping holes in the defense through which Ronnie Brown ran untouched. But what does bother me is that in the past, the Pats always found ways to beat the teams they were supposed to beat. That's a very good point, Joel. And that's the one thing they really just did not do. In the past, even with subpar games, this team always found a way to beat the teams they were supposed to beat, and they obviously could not do that this past Sunday. Interesting. All right, here we go. Kenneth. As for fans booing, yeah, fans are allowed to do what they want, but it's my feeling that a true fan will support and encourage their team rather than turn against them. Signs of dismay, sure, but booing a team is just a giant bleep you. Like the team needed any help knowing that they were doing a terrible job? Yeah, it just depends on what your feeling is about booing in particular. I personally have a thing against booing collegians. I don't think college athletes in any form or fashion should be booed because, frankly, they're just kids, number one. You know, they're anywhere from 18 to 21 or 22 years old. They're not paid, although some would argue that they're getting a, you know, free ride through college out of it. A lot of them don't get a completely free ride. Even so, though, they're not paid a salary to do this. They're not there for our enjoyment or for our amusement so much as we're there to support our alma mater or the school that we support. Professional players are different. They're paid to do this. Anyway, that's just you know, my own personal opinion. Ken says, in hindsight, the game was a perfect trap game. A team that never loses against a team that never wins just before a bye week. The Dolphins are definitely improved over last year. Many of their losses last season were by very small margins. The Pats are missing Brady and searching for an identity for this season. By the way, where the hell is our running game? That's another good nitpick, by the way. I saw nothing out of Sammy Morris. Very disappointed in Sammy Morris' performance on Sunday. Lamont Jordan probably was not supposed to play, but he avoided being a last-minute scratch, got into the game, and I don't know what to tell you about Lawrence Maroney, but I continue to maintain he's just not tough enough. He was obviously he did not suit up. He was a scratch with his shoulder injury, and I'm not convinced that Lawrence Maroney will even be here for the long haul, much less be an every down back for the Patriots. Ken says, does Buffalo win the division this year? I still don't think so. I think the Pats will pull it together. It's just a single game setback, but it is worth the conversation. I won't, you know, kind of like what Vic Carucci from NFL.com told us last week. He said the Patriots have to show him. You know what? The Bills got to show me, okay? And yeah, the Bills are 3-0. Okay, right now, through the first 3 weeks, they have the lead in the division. That's fine. There's still 13 more weeks to play, last I checked the schedule. Bills still have to come here, and yes, they have to handle the Patriots, too, there. So if they can whack the Patriots at least once, if not twice, then they'll have me convinced that they're a legitimate contender. But I don't think until that happens. Yemi from Texas. I have two questions. Is a divisional winner determined by overall record or a record within the division? Well, number one, it's overall record. But if there's a tie in overall record, then the division record is the tiebreaker. Does that make sense, Jimmy? And has Brandon Merriweather done anything so far to show he could be a solid player in this league? Please give me a reason other than he plays a lot of snaps, because that can be a reflection on his draft position and lack of alternatives on the team. He's a bad tackler. His coverage skills are average at best. I can't even point to one strength in his game. I'd have to say, I'm not going to skirt this issue, but I have to say incomplete still, because I'd like to see him in there as an every down potential back, and he doesn't play that role. You know, he's a backup safety. He'll get some time as a nickelback. I don't know. I'd have to see him as an every down kind of guy. I think he probably deserves at least that benefit of the doubt before I come out and declare him a bust. I'm not quite ready to do that yet. Todd in Nova Scotia, what's the point of having Randy Moss not throw the long ball? They did this to him in Oakland. I'm not saying every play, but if he doesn't go deep two or three times a game, you're wasting his talent. Well, I can't disagree. As Coach Belichick explained here a week ago yesterday, that, you know, the Jets in particular were rolling over the safety. They were man coverage on the line. They were bringing the safety over. In effect, once he got 10 to 15 yards downfield, he was being double teamed. I tried to look for that a little bit on Sunday, but my job is to watch the ball and to watch the play, so I didn't get a chance to look away from it as much. It looked like there was more single coverage, and I think that the Dolphins were just going to kind of pin their ears back and come after, as Joey Porter suggested, come after Matt Castle, and they were obviously successful in doing that. There's no doubt in my mind that you've got to find a way to put a couple of deep roots in there just to stretch a defense out and put that thought in their head. I wouldn't disagree with that at all, Todd. I wouldn't disagree with that at all. John sends us this email. He says, John, like everyone, I was completely blown away by the performance, or lack thereof, by the Pats on Sunday. I am annoyed by the hatred toward Castle, like the entire loss was his fault. Sure, he didn't play well either. Wobbly passes and a pick, but people act like they need someone to blame. You know, that's true, John, and he is the scapegoat because he's the focal point. He's the quarterback. He's the guy that came in for the guy who's down for the season, down for the count. But as I suggested earlier, John, I think most people, as they analyze this game, and even the smart Patriot fans and the not-so-smart, would realize that this loss was way deeper than just Matt Castle. If the defense hadn't been such a sieve on Sunday, I would grant you that and the referees hadn't blown, you know, that touchdown call on the sack, I would argue that the Patriots could have won this game somewhere in the vicinity of about 20-13. You know, wouldn't have been impressive, but I think they could have won it. Anyway, John says, it seems as if the Dolphins' strategy was to try every trick, gimmick, and kitchen sink play that they could come up with, and it worked. Boy, did it work. I still don't think the Dolphins will amount to much this year, and the same thought, I still feel the Patriots will achieve great things. Any given Sunday, it's campy, but it's true. How else would you explain this loss? How else would you explain the upsets this weekend, or any upset for that reason? Here's what bothered me the most. When we came out in the second half, we should have been completely prepared for them. We weren't. The Dolphins changed nothing. They kept doing the same play, and it kept working. That's just unacceptable. And, John, you bring up another interesting point, because one of the other things that this Patriots team has never been accused of not being is ill-prepared, that they make adjustments perhaps as well as any team in pro football, especially on-the-fly, in-game adjustments. They didn't do that on Sunday, did they? I thought for sure that they would make the adjustments to that single wing, you know, direct snap formation at halftime. Say, all right, here's what we got to do. You know, when we see them line up this way, here's what you got to do, you got to do, you got to do. And do all of that. And they didn't seem to do it. They still seemed as confused and as lost as the first time they saw it. And that, yes, I agree with you. To me, that's one of the most overriding, disappointing factors of Sunday. They did not seem to make the adjustments. And that's something the Patriots usually do. Webradio at Patriots.com. That's our email address, webradio at Patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Nitpick Tuesday. What's the biggest nitpick, the biggest problem, the biggest, the glaringest error you saw from Sunday? Number one, are Patriots fans spoiled by the success over the last 7 to 8 years? That's number two. And number three, do the Patriots need a little electronic shock treatment? A cut? A signing? Something along those lines? What are your thoughts? We'll get to more of your emails, plus Brian Lowe from Patriots Today, coming up inside the playbook.
I just didn't feel real crisp.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan
and former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers our playing days, like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick?
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas Tree Shops, Off-Broadway Shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene Restaurant and Bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5,
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And now, here's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday rolls along. Hour number two on this bye week for the Pats as they go into the week at 2-1. And by the way, I didn't mention off the top, but quite frankly, 2-1 is where exactly I thought the Patriots would be after 3 weeks. I just didn't think that they would lose in the form and fashion or to the opponent that they lost to. But fact is the end result is they're 2-1. And that's where I thought they'd be after 3 weeks. So are they on schedule? Well, no, I don't think anybody really kind of thinks of them as on schedule. We welcome in Brian Lowe from Patriots Today and the Fantasy Lowdown. What's happening?
You thought they'd lose to Kansas City, right?
I thought that they would lose. No, I thought they would lose to the Jets, frankly. Well, if they lost to anybody, I thought it'd be to the Jets.
Right.
So
I thought it was going to be a 4-0 with the bye, and then you start getting into a little bit of trouble with or without Tom Brady. 2-1 could be worse. I mean, you know, they didn't blow out Kansas City or the Jets. Those were games that, you know, hypothetically they could have lost. So they are 2-1. But sour taste to go into the bye week with not just losing and not just losing to any, you know, good playoff team. That was at home to that team by that margin.
Right.
That's just kind of stunning and not the way you want to go into a bye week. But it does give them a chance. You know, they are at a different stage than where they thought they'd be entering the season. You know, get a little bit of a chance to regroup and, you know, maybe really have some early season analysis of, you know, we need to change this element going forward. Or, well, this is okay, but we've got to upgrade there. It's a good opportunity to sort of regroup and take stock of where you are before you get into, you know, not just the grind of the season, but, you know, 13 straight weeks, or you hope 16 or 17 straight weeks going forward now where you don't really get much of a break.
Well, when you start, you know, a couple of weeks before your first exhibition game, you have to feel like this team has now been going on for about, nine weeks themselves already.
Yeah, training camp.
So training camp, from it started till now, it's been 9 weeks, almost 10 weeks. So it's a little earlier than the halfway, the true halfway point of the season. But nevertheless, this does come at a good time. We talked about even that last week, I think, Brian, just because, you know, the team still needed another week, I think, to emotionally heal over, you know, the loss of Brady in week one.
Well, that's the thing. An injury like that happens, and let's face it, that wasn't just any old injury. That was a key injury where you really have to re-examine certain elements of your team and elements of your game, and you don't get a chance to do that during the season. A game ends on a Sunday at 4:00, and you are immediately mm-hmm. looking towards the next game. And yeah, you have practice during the week. Yeah, you can work on fundamentals a little bit. Yeah, you can make a practice squad transaction, or you know, cut a Kyle Echol and bring in a Steven Spock, that kind of stuff. You don't really have an opportunity during the season, with the possible exception of the bye week, to take stock of what's going on with your team, see where things stand. So in that sense, this is a good time for it. And you make a good point that you can't just look at the season as we're in week three out of 17. It's way too early for the bye. You're right. They started 2 months ago. But if you're a team that has aspirations to play deep into January and maybe into February, you'd rather that bye week, you know, be, you know, a little bit later down the line. So it truly is sort of at the midway point. I feel like they've kind of lucked out in the last couple of years where they had the bye around week 8, 9, 10. I think that's the ideal spot, sort of middle of the regular season, but also sort of middle of the when you take into account preseason and postseason. So in this particular case, though, I think it's a good time for the bye for this particular team. In certain other cases, you know, you might say later on in the season would be better. But, they, you know, they got some work to do, and they'll do it. And you know, they're not going to, you know, as Richard Seymour said, before they bury the tape of this Miami game or before they throw it down the river, they will look at it, and they will see what needs to be done and make corrections before they get to the Bay Area in 2 weeks.
I hope they have airline sickness bags.
Yeah.
In the backs of all of the seat pockets.
Oh, boy. You know who I hope had airline sickness bags is the Jets when they had their red eye back from San Diego.
Yeah, no
they may have needed those.
Yeah, that's true. That
was
not pretty last night either.
No.
All right, webradio at patriots.com. The email address again, 508-543-7482, the telephone number. To recap Nitpick Tuesday here, what you thought was the biggest nitpick from Sunday's debacle. I gave you mine. I think the inability to recognize, you know, the single wing formation and Ronnie Brown and then not only to not recognize it, but then fail to adjust to it because they ran it a couple of times, you know. So that's the biggest nitpick I had, number one. Number two, are Patriots fans spoiled? Are they truly spoiled in the truest sense of the word, spoiled? Have we been conditioned so much to win around here that we no longer appreciate winning or effort? Or, you know, a good old college try. I mean, are we that spoiled? That's number two. And, of course, number three today in particular, I'm calling for a change, a scenery, a shock to the system, something to give the players in that locker room an edge to look over their shoulder and think that something else might be coming, just to give them a sense of urgency. My call is to go out and find a guy like Jeff Garcia who may very well be available in the coming, you know, hours, if not days. If Tampa Bay lets him go, if they cut him loose, I think the Patriots would get him. Or maybe they do that by cutting somebody completely, completely unexpected.
Yeah.
What do you think about those, Brian?
Well, let's go one by one.
Okay.
And
good.
I'm going to start with number one.
Okay.
Where you, you know, you ask what was, you know, as far as nitpick, as far as, you know, during those 60 minutes on Sunday, there is no question that the most glaring element of that game was the Patriots' inability to stop, to recognize, to adjust to that direct snap to Ronnie Brown situation. I mean, to do that six times, and really five of the six were successful,
mm-hmm.
four of the six, was it three or four of the six, were the ultimate success that you could possibly have in a play. Touchdowns
yeah.
on those plays.
I think it was three. But
three of them,
yeah,
two
right.
runs and the touchdown, whatever it was.
Right.
There was really only one play of those six that they only got a two-yard gain or something like that. I think it was one of the Ricky Williams. To not be able to adjust to that is really stunning, and that was so glaring because you don't expect this coaching staff and this team of veteran defenders who you know are legendary for their halftime adjustments, for even their sideline adjustments in between series. That was stunning to me, and that was the most glaring. However, I don't think it's as big of a problem going forward as the fact that so many players, a la Greg Camarillo, David Martin, Anthony Fasano, were wide open up the gut of the Patriots defense for Chad Pennington to throw 15-yard passes that became 35-yard mm-hmm. plays. That, to me, was more glaring because, let's be honest, the Patriots are going to now make sure that they shore up this defense of the single wing tee or whatever, you know, direct snap in practice. And, you know, the Dolphins might not want to run it six times when they meet again in November because, let's be honest, the Patriots are probably going to be prepared for it. I think going forward, a more glaring problem is the fact that the over-the-middle up the gut of this defense was way too inviting for an opposing quarterback. And that's a problem. It's one thing if during a game, an Anthony Fasano finds a seam up the middle, catches a pass, and runs 20 more yards. This happened over and over and over again. Chad Pennington, you know, arm strength is not his forte. So to give him those 10 to 15-yard plays and then allow the receiver to run free down the middle for 20 yards, to me, that's a more glaring problem that they need to fix, and I don't know if they necessarily have the horses to fix it. So that, to me, is a big problem. No doubt about it. The direct snap to Ronnie Brown was a problem, but I just think that that was almost a one-time deal, a game plan sort of thing that the Patriots were not able to adjust to and failed miserably on, but more of a consistent problem could end up being the up the middle defense.
Let me read you something that I've been able to dig up from Football Outsiders.
Yeah,
footballoutsiders.com.
Sure.
It's a good website. I know a lot of our listeners probably consider it one of their favorite football sites, you know, as we share information and good places to go get good information from time to time here. I got this from Football Outsiders, and they said the clever formations were not the only way Miami moved the ball.
Yeah.
Dolphins also ran the ball well in traditional formations. Ricky Williams, who was all but useless in the first two games they played, 98 yards, 60 carries.
Yeah.
The Dolphins were able to dominate the interior line. Vince Wilfork, a complete non-factor. Samson Satele controlled the point of attack. That's the Dolphins center. The second-year player is definitely an intriguing talent for a team that is searching for difference makers. Mm-hmm. Wilfork's struggles were symptomatic of a team-wide inability to attack the line of scrimmage. The Dolphins' misdirection plays left defenders on their heels. Patriots' older, bigger linebackers were unable to get going once they paused, and Brown and Williams easily slid through the resulting holes. The struggles at the point of attack were not news for the Patriots. Football Outsiders measures the success of offensive and defensive lines with their adjusted line yard stats. And through week 9 of the 07 season, the Patriots' defensive line ranked 13th in the league. Over the last 8 weeks, it's ranked 27th.
Wow.
If the running game were the only problem, the Patriots could toy with using safeties in run support. But the snag is that the Patriots were equally undone by the Dolphins' passing offense, as you just pointed out. Until Brown's passing touchdown that put the Dolphins up 28-6 and effectively ended the game, the Dolphins were passing on 50% of their plays. Chad Pennington efficiently diced up the Patriots' zone coverage. Patriots often play zone and try to disguise their schemes. The departure of cornerback Asante Samuel leaves them thin in the secondary and even less likely to play man-to-man. So his lack of arm strength, Pennington's lack of arm strength, makes man coverage the preferred option. But the Patriots were stuck in zone. So Pennington responded by dominating the middle of the field for what you just talked about, Brian, 10 to 20-yard gains against the linebackers. He completed 16 of his final 17 passes and was never sacked. He, as much as Ronnie Brown, controlled the game.
Yeah, he wasn't sacked. He was barely pressured. I mean, there were a couple of plays late in the game where he still eluded some pressure. Not sacked, not pressured, and just had way too much of an inviting area of space over the middle. The linebackers, safeties, I think it was a lot of trouble for those guys. Not recognizing, Pennington isn't the most mobile guy, and he doesn't have the best arm strength. So you would think that, last year when he was with the Jets, the game here, the play that he got knocked out on was a Richard Seymour rush up the middle, and he ends up throwing an interception. I think it was Eugene Wilson that picked it off and ran. There was nothing coming close to that. You get some pressure on Chad Pennington, I think you can force him, get some sacks or at least force him into some errant throws. He had 85. He completed 85% of his passes. That means that there was a combination of no pressure and too much space for him to work with over the middle.
Right,
and that's trouble. That was a little trouble.
All right, so there's our biggest nitpick. Defensively, I think it had to be hands down. It wasn't Matt Cassel, even though he seemed to take the brunt of a lot of the complaints in the immediate aftermath of the game.
Yeah.
It wasn't Matt Cassel, kids.
He wasn't the problem.
He wasn't great, but he wasn't the biggest problem.
He wasn't the problem. He wasn't the solution. And maybe they weren't going to win a game against anyone on this day because the offense definitely didn't have a lot of flow. But this was the defense.
This was on the defense. This is definitely on the defense.
This was a day where Ellis Hobbs set a team record for kickoff return yardage. They didn't have terrible field position on this day.
That's right.
The one time he had an 80-something yard score was their one touchdown, so that goes to show you it's not like the offense, even in their drives that they scored, the offense didn't really move the ball that much. Their one touchdown was when they got the ball on the 20-yard line or around there, and then the two field goals were they had stalled in the red zone. So the offense didn't do anything special in this game. But, if you score 13 points, you should be in the game towards the end. You know, if you score 13 points offensively, you should still be in the game. Your defense, giving up the 38, this was on the defense.
Next then.
Yeah, well, Ellis Hobbs' biggest nitpick is definitely
the fans. We saw that, and it's been in the Boston papers. It was in the Herald today,
right?
Complaining about the fans booing and that he thinks the fans are spoiled. And you know, he brings up an interesting point because I happen to think he's right.
Well, I think he's right. I think the standards around here have definitely been raised over the last decade. And I'm saying, you know, here at Gillette Stadium, but in the other venues around Boston, Fenway Park and the Garden as well, the standards have been raised. And overall, that's a good thing. You want that. And, you know, the player, there's some accountability on the players to perform at the highest level. I'm not in position here by any means to say that there was any effort issue overall in this team. I don't think it was an effort issue, and I don't think the fans are booing. The fans are booing performance. I don't know if they're booing effort. I don't know if they're booing poor effort. They're booing performance. Was it disgusting that the player that fans left at the beginning of the fourth quarter, as Benjamin Watson said? Are they spoiled, as Ellis Hobbs said? I don't think it's either one of those. I think the fans have every right to express themselves, and if that means that expressing yourself in the form of boos or expressing yourself in the form of "I'm disgusted, I'm walking out of here," even though one full quarter of the game is still to play, not the way I would operate.
By the way, I'm too cheap to walk out in the fourth quarter.
Right, and you know what? I'm probably going to still have a beer and still have a hot dog in the fourth quarter. You know, but you know, you're kind of joking. But there are 8 home games a year. If you're, you know, and certainly there are some people who come to every game and have been coming to every game for years. There are also some people who maybe if they're lucky, they get to one game a year, or maybe this was their one game. Once a decade, they find themselves here, and it's a beautiful day, and they think they're going to, at worst, enjoy a good competitive football game, even if the Patriots don't win. So there's some frustration there when, you know, they're losing by 30 or close to it in the fourth quarter, and you know the game's over, and you know they're looking terrible, and you're going to boo, and you're going to, you know, show some disgust and all that, and you might leave. I'm not in favor of, hey, let's give a round of applause to these professional athletes, regardless of their performance, because even though they're down by 25, I'm not going to cheer them if they're doing poorly, but not my thing to walk out. You know, I'd probably stick it out, watch the whole game. It's part of just enjoying the day, but, you know, I don't have a problem with fans expressing the way they felt about this game, but they've got to keep in mind this, until proven otherwise, this was one bad day at the office in the midst of what's been a pretty good era here.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's like, I remember the game against the Chargers 3 years ago when in 2005 the Patriots are coming off a Super Bowl win, and they had, you know, they started the season not great. I think they were either 1-2 or 2-2. I think they were 2-1 at the time. They're hosting the Chargers early in the season. Big game against another good team, and, you know, this is a Patriots team coming off a Super Bowl, like I said, and they got beaten and battered up and down the field. I remember it may have been Matt Castle's first game, actually, the first game he ever appeared in. He threw an interception that was returned for a touchdown, and they lost something like 44-17, something like that. And I think there were some boos that day. And that's fine. But you've got to understand that unless and until this becomes a pattern, where they're, you know, losing by 25 points to inferior teams every week, you might just have to look at it as one bad day and give them a chance to, you know, recover by the next time they come onto their home field here.
All right, and point number three today we wanted your thoughts and your comments on had to do with how do you fix the problem. That's been a question that a few of you have certainly asked so far today, and I know that's been a topic of conversation through PFW and through Patriots Monday yesterday. And, how do you go about fixing this problem if there is a problem? And part of the thing that I think you need to do is you need to give this team back some kind of an emotional edge, something to give them. This team we know that this team operates well when it has something to hook itself onto, whether it's negativity or slight or this or that. And so my point is, shake things up. Put guys on the edge of their seats, so to speak. Get them looking over their shoulders at, you know, who's playing behind them kind of thing. Do it by shaking up the roster. Add somebody that you don't necessarily think you'd go and get, or you cut somebody that, you know, maybe you're not thinking deserves it. Now, to this point, I'm an advocate of signing and picking up right now a guy like Jeff Garcia. Is Matt Castle the entire problem? No, and we've already discussed this. However, I mentioned in the opening hour here that when Tom Brady replaced Drew Bledsoe in 2001, he didn't have a team built to win now around him. Mm-hmm. Matt Castle has a team built to win now, allegedly, around him.
Right.
Therefore, a veteran presence might be better equipped to do what needs to be done. And to that point, Football Outsiders again. Mm-hmm. They've got my back today, all right? Or I've got theirs, one way or the other, right? The bigger story in New England, where the defense might not be ready to carry the Brady-less offense into the playoffs, to earn a sixth straight playoff berth, the Patriots need Castle to develop to the point at which he can be relied on to do more than just not make mistakes. And that's exactly it. The offense is going to have to be more Brady-like. And if Castle can't deliver that, maybe a veteran guy like Garcia could.
Well, I don't feel like Bill Belichick is going to be afraid to make the move that he thinks is going to be the catalyst for this team. There's no question. If he feels like they have Super Bowl aspirations, and I know he does, and he feels like Matt Castle is not going to be the guy to get that done, he won't be afraid to make that change. I think it's going to take more than just this past game for that to happen. And here's what I think about veteran quarterbacks who are out there right now. Why wouldn't they bring in a veteran quarterback that they have some reason to believe could do well back in March or April? If they didn't think, I don't think bringing in a veteran quarterback right now is going to solve the problem. Because here's the way I think about it. There's a reason why veteran quarterback X or veteran quarterback Y, whether that's Jeff Garcia or Damon Hewitt or Tim Rattay, is available right now. There's a reason. That doesn't mean they're a bad quarterback. It just means there's a reason they're available. They're not one of the top 32. They don't have a job right now. And I think that the Patriots feel that bringing a guy like that in, where he's going to have to, on the fly, learn the playbook, learn his teammates, gain the confidence of his teammates.
I'm not buying that,
Brian. You don't buy that?
No, I don't buy that. I mean, I've heard, you know, the EEI guys, you know, guys that, you know, we work with, the guys on Patriots, I've heard everybody say, well, you know, hey, look at Brett Favre. He's had about 6 weeks or so with the Jets, and he doesn't know half the playbook yet. And I'm not buying it, and here's why I'm not buying it. I do believe that you can do anything. First of all, a veteran quarterback has been around enough time, knows that just the terminology changes mostly between teams, but the actual execution of the plays is largely the same. I mean, there's only so many times you can run a 15-yard down and out, or, you know, a 12-yard slant, or whatever it may end up being. It's the same with everywhere. The terminology may be different. The whole point here, though, is that if you have a veteran quarterback who's been around the league, who's played for several offensive coordinators and or head coaches, you're going to know a lot of technology, you're going to lower not a lot of terminology, rather, in that particular instance. Number two, if you know that this is your last dance or maybe your last chance to play and play well, play at a high level, maybe even get a ring, you'll do whatever it can. Number three, the team will not give you anything that you cannot handle. They're not going to be so stubborn as to say, well, that's the playbook, it's up to you to learn it. No, they don't operate like that. The team needs to win. It's not all about principle here. It's about winning. So if they have to, quote-unquote, dumb it down or not utilize 100% of the plays in the playbook for somebody to catch on a little quicker, that's exactly what they do. And if you have the talent on the football field that you purport that you already do, guys like Moss who can go and get it and can make plays, why the heck do you have to know the whole playbook?
Well, I've been an advocate of bringing in a veteran quarterback. I've tried to figure out why in these last 2 years, last two off seasons, with the as well-rounded a team that they have, I felt that they are a backup quarterback, a competent, experienced backup quarterback away from being the perfect well-rounded team. What if Tom Brady goes down? You bring in an experienced guy, whereas Matt Castle might not be able to get the job done. But at this point, you bring up Brett Favre. How's that? I mean, is that working out? I don't know if that's working out. He hasn't looked great to me. He looks confused.
I'm sorry. I mean, I had a decent year last year. I don't think he looked that great. I thought Green Bay was a pretty good team without him last year.
Right.
Monday night notwithstanding, I know the Packers ran into a pretty good Cowboy team, but Aaron Rodgers is not that bad either.
No. But right now with Brett, I mean, you Jets bringing in Brett Favre 6 weeks ago.
Right.
You know, I don't think that's Brett Favre, and I don't think so far that's working out. I don't think they're any better with Brett Favre, and I think
that's because the Jets as a team were not as good. They're not as good as the Packers were last year, and the Jets as a team are not as good as the Patriots are this year. But if you bring a quarterback like Favre, if you put Favre behind the Patriots line right now, Patriots are right back, I think, within a hair of being where they were a year ago. Potential to be there.
Well, sure. The Favre to Castle upgrade is far, far greater probably than the Favre to Pennington upgrade. And you wonder if Favre didn't get traded to the Jets and was still with the Packers all the way through, if Brett Favre would have been a guy Patriots would be interested in. I think a Vinny Testaverde is more likely to be here than a Jeff Garcia. I really do.
Can he still walk?
He might be able to. He might not be.
Doesn't he need a cane or something?
Jeff Garcia might have a quicker gait than Vinny Testaverde right now.
Well, I think
but
that's
I'll
what
you
need. I think you need the ability to move out of the pocket. I mean, we've already seen that from Castle. He's been pummeled. The offensive line has not been good thus far this year.
Well, the ability to move out of the pocket, sure, you want to be better than
that's why
than
Dante Culpepper would not be the answer, in whatever, you know, Randy Moss may think and want his buddy there. Culpepper would be like, you know, shooting fish in a barrel, okay?
Well,
he's gone. He has nothing left in the legs.
Why do you think, you remember a couple weeks ago, well, of course you remember, after Brady went down, when the whole thing with Tim Rattay and Chris Sims possibly coming in here, for workouts, and then, well, did they come? Did they work out? Did they show up? And it turned out maybe they showed up, maybe they stopped by, maybe Bill Belichick, you know, called them up and said, hey, come on in. But they didn't come in to work out, and I feel like that would have been the time to bring someone in, someone who's available. And by now, if they haven't, I think they're going with who they got. Should they bring someone in? I don't see why. I don't see where it hurts to bring in the best available quarterback to keep some competition. But whether it's because they don't want Castle looking over his shoulder, or they truly do have faith in him and they're going to win or lose with him, at this point, if they haven't done anything yet, I don't think they're going to do anything. And I think if they do,
no, you may be right.
And I think if they do, it's Vinny Testaverde or bust. I truly do, because he's the guy who's been around the last couple, or at least was here a little bit in 05, 06, 07 training camp. Knows everybody. What you may be right. I may be completely overrating the idea of knowing the playbook, knowing the terminology. But there's something about knowing the guys, knowing the coaches, being able to jump in week four of the NFL season, showing up on Tuesday, being in the meeting rooms on Wednesday, knowing who you're dealing with, knowing Josh McDaniels, knowing all the knowing Dante Scarnecchia and talking about protection, knowing Jabbar Gaffney and Heath Evans and maybe Randy Moss a little bit too. I think it's a guy who's been here, who knows these people in this system a little bit, or it's no one. They're sticking with Matt Castle, Kevin O'Connell, Matt Gutierrez.
Well,
hey, this is Doug Flutie.
He chimed in. He chimed in last week and said, "I don't think so." But the difference with Doug Flutie is he'll be proactive and letting you know.
Hey, this is Doug Flutie.
Thanks, Doug.
I may still be giving my retirement press conference. But download the podcast now.
There you go. One team in the NFL has changed quarterback today. Mark Bulger is out as the Rams quarterback. Of course, the Rams being a future Patriot opponent.
The Patriots' second bye week is October 20-something.
See, talk like that and think it like that will get you another L is what it will do. But
not on my watch. It doesn't count for me.
Bulger is out, and 38-year-old backup Trent Green is in. So the Rams' highest-paid player, the quarterback, Mark Bulger, benched, announced by Coach Scott Linehan in a release earlier today, signals just how desperate times have become for the sagging franchise. Linehan, 11-24, is head coach in his third season. They're 0-3 this year. So Trent Green in, Mark Bulger out in St. Louis.
Yeah, I think last...
Just in time for the Buffalo Bills, by the way, this weekend. Hey, how about that?
I think last year there was a record in the league for a number of starting quarterbacks over the course of the season. It was 60-something, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
We're entering week four, and I believe if you take the 32 starters from opening day,
right.
I think this might already be... something like 8 new starters already. I think they're already up to
40.
Yeah. And, a combination of injuries and benching. And, I would not be surprised if there's a few more to come down the stretch. But, any Patriots fan who, is eager to boo or leave and all that, and by all means, do that if you feel that the performance warrants it. Think about if you're a football fan, a professional football fan in, say, the state of Missouri. A combined 0-6, Kansas City and St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
How about the state of Ohio, a combined 0-6, Cincinnati and Cleveland? I think you might feel a little better about yourself right now, knowing you're a Patriots fan and you're around here, than a fan of one of those other teams that is either highly disappointing or highly inept, or, of course, in some cases, both. So don't worry. This team is equipped to maybe turn things around here in Foxborough and get back on track after the bye. I think a few of those other teams, if you're a fan of their of those teams, you're thinking, boy, who was the first projected pick in the 09 draft? Who's number two? At least we're not quite thinking about that just yet. We'll have a few months to think about that. We're not thinking about that quite yet. So
is there a Is there a deadline date for either trade or cut down coming up fairly quickly? Or
For trades, yeah. That's usually around week 7 or week 8.
I was about to say.
Yeah, it's usually mid-October.
Mid-October, right?
Yeah, middle of October. Okay. And I don't know exactly which one of that is, but that's, yeah.
If something happened, it would have to happen, I would think, within the next couple of weeks, unless, you know, someone like Tampa Bay decides to go ahead and shelve, you know, Garcia and cut him loose now.
Right. There's no deadline for cutting guys and picking up guys off of waivers or off of free agency.
Right.
So, you know, if Tampa Bay ends up cutting Jeff Garcia on November 1st and the Patriots are interested,
right,
you can pick him up. And, you know, hey, we've seen guys added to the roster, not necessarily via trade, but added to the roster in October, November, probably even
with
December.
With half the season left.
With half the season left, who make an impact. And a couple guys who come to mind who are still around: Heath Evans, Jabbar Gaffney. These are guys who were signed off the scrap heap.
Yeah, Gaffney's a good one.
And you know what? For every Jabbar Gaffney, there are, you know, 7 to 10, I can't think of a name off the top of my head, but 7 to 10 guys, Amos Zeraway, for instance, who are signed on October 15th and are cut on October 20th.
Right.
You know, he may have been around longer than that, but you know what I'm saying. There's, you know, it's not often that you can get a guy like Jabbar Gaffney, who you sign in October of 2006, and he's still your third receiver in October of 2008, or Heath Evans, who's a valuable component to the offense and special teams, who signs in November of 05, I believe, and is still around. But it's possible. At quarterback, it's a tougher position to just jump in and fill in at that quarterback at that position than some others, but it's possible. But yeah, there is a trade deadline coming up. I'll probably try to find the exact date, but usually it's around right just after week 7.
So. Yeah,
something like
so.
That. Yeah.
Something to point towards then in the next couple of weeks anyway. All right, back to the emails, webradio@patriots.com. If you have your thoughts on the things that we've been talking about in this particular hour, go ahead and fire it off now as we work for our last 25 minutes or so here on the program for today. Our friend Howard in Orange, Connecticut says, I cannot find the words to begin to describe what I witnessed this past Sunday. All the momentum gained from winning a divisional road game the week before against the Jets was completely blown away. And so under the heading Areas for Improvement, he says, everything!
Oh, boy.
And I'm not underestimating. He's got 5 exclamation points on that one.
The kicking position, I think, is going to stay.
Yeah, he said accepting the kick return game and field goals.
Yeah.
Bottom line, it's one game. They have a bye week to clean things up and improve on the fiasco that was Sunday. Luckily, they get a lowly 49ers team. However, that was what they were saying before the Finns game, too. So they had best not take them lightly.
Yeah.
And I would argue that they're not so lowly because they're 2-1.
They're 2-1. They've got some talent. Believe it or not, J.T. O'Sullivan once occupied a practice squad locker down the hall here.
Yeah, I was about to say. Maybe,
how about one that got away?
Yeah.
J.T. O'Sullivan. No, but in all honesty, the 49ers,
Could they have found somebody like the Bills found Trent Edwards, you know?
Yeah, well, Trent Edwards was a fairly high draft pick, though. I mean, he was he was drafted in
but
the
second,
third.
But I don't think it wasn't expected of him to
do it because
J.P. Losman was their guy.
That's right. Trent Edwards last year was actually the first game of the season. I'm sorry. Not the first game of the season. It was
second.
week two or week three, whatever it was last year, when J.P. Losman got hurt.
Right.
Edwards came in, and immediately there was a QB controversy there. And clearly Edwards is the future now for them. But with San Francisco, they've been a surprise, and they've got some talent. They've got some talent on offense. They've got some talent on defense, too. And, what they did, are they 2-1 or are they 1-2? I think they might be 2-1. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a solid team, and I'm not sure who they have this weekend coming up and what kind of momentum they might have coming into that game, but that's going to be a tough game, and I feel like every road game this year for the Patriots is going to be tough. I think they're going to have some real battles on their hands, even against the San Franciscos, the Oaklands, and obviously now the Miamis of the world. Some of their road games are going to be tough games, or were going to be tough games, even with Tom Brady. San Diego, Seattle, Indianapolis, even the Jets last week. But the San Francisco team, I wouldn't call lowly as of right now.
Howard also says, all right, here we go. Offensive line completely overwhelmed, did not always give Castle time to make reads. Quarterback needs to see the whole field and stop locking in on a specific wide receiver. He's got a lot of nitpicks here.
Yeah.
Defensive line, manhandled by the Miami O-line. They are too talented to let that happen. Linebackers, too many missed tackles, too many missed reads, especially on the Ronnie Brown runs. DBs, why do they consistently play 10 yards off of the opposing opposing wide receivers. They were pretty loose.
Yeah.
Coaching, failure to make or find adjustments that would work against the unconventional attack of the Dolphins. Every team is a bad game, he says. Hopefully we can chalk this up as the stinker for this year and move on and get better as the season improves. Time will tell.
Some good thoughts there.
No arguments at all with anything.
You know, not much of an argument. Yeah. I mean, you know, and some of those are you know, as far, it's a coaching issue if you're talking about why are these guys playing 10 yards off the ball and they're trying to contain. I don't know, but it's a good question right there. And the real question is, do they currently have the horses to pull off whatever changes they want to make? You know, they're not going to increase their team speed over the next 2 weeks. They're not going to increase their team strength over the next 2 weeks. That's not what they're going to be able to do now. I mean, you know, if Teddy Bruschi is a step slow right now as an NFL player, that's not going to improve by the time they get to San Francisco on October 5th. Mm-hmm. Same with Rodney Harrison. So they've got some issues there. Now, whether it's a big shakeup or a real jolt to the system, as you said, or if it's a tweak here or there, or if it's just an understanding that it was a bad day, we got a lot of work to do, but we're going to do it with the guys we got. It'll be an interesting 10 days coming up. They do have a roster spot open right now because they cut Kyle Echol yesterday without adding anyone to the roster. So, you know, question is it, where are they going to add that guy? Here comes Jeff, John says. here comes Jeff. Could it be John Lynch?
Yeah, that's true. Could be John Lynch. That's right.
Do they feel, Brandon Merriweather got banged up in that game. I don't know.
Well,
It could be something like that.
Do we know how bad Brandon was?
No, we don't. And we probably won't know till next Wednesday around 4.
Right, right.
of course, but and that may not be a major injury. I don't know. I mean, he definitely got hurt and was helped off the field. Looked like on his own power, but hard to say. Yeah. You know, if that's anything major.
Well, John Lynch would be the obvious replacement.
Lynch would be the and they don't have a ton of depth at that position. Rodney, James Sanders. And Brandon Merriweather are your top three, and then you're talking about Ray Ventrone, and really that's it as far as defensive backs, as far as safety. So if there is an injury situation with Brandon Merriweather, they certainly would have to upgrade there or have to add someone. And Mark Dillard is their only safety on the practice squad, so you'd think they want to do better than that. So that's one thing to keep an eye on there as far as that roster spot. There's no urgency necessarily to get a guy in there right now because you don't have a game until next Sunday. They may be taking a couple days here to figure out where they want to best utilize that spot. But
all right, well, remember you heard it here first.
Yeah, yeah. I'll say John Lynch, you say Jeff Garcia, and we'll bet this pizza.
Absolutely. Right. Actually, I think the John Lynch moves makes a lot of sense, especially in a lot of Merriweather. So,
yeah.
Let's see. John sends an email here, and he says, boy, are we spoiled as fans. Yes, it was an awful, awful loss, but settle down. We lost one game. One. We can't blame Castle for everything. We didn't beat a team we should have. It aggravates me that people booed. You spoiled little brats. Look what this team has given you for 7 years. So now we're in a bad spot, and you don't back your team? Stay home. I have never, never left a game early, winning or losing. People leaving with 13 minutes left. Unbelievable. If you want to see a sure thing, stay home and rent Rudy.
Good one. The ending hasn't changed.
I like that. The ending's still the same. Fans no longer cheer. They just expect. We're spoiled. There's no doubt. And you know it's true when Matt Light and Ellis Hobbs are actually bringing it up in the media. The players have more to think about than fans cheering, but they actually noticed. So to close, I hope all you fans are listening. Get behind your team or get going. The last thing any team needs is getting booed by their own fans. Get behind them and show some class.
Yeah, I think there was some booing at Boston College on Saturday as well. Maybe it was just something in the air here this weekend. BC was where they were tied, I think, with Central Florida or losing to Central Florida early on, and their quarterback got booed. So maybe it was just a New England situation this weekend. Things turned out a little better for BC, though, than the Patriots.
Yeah.
You know,
31 unanswered points, I think, in that
That's
game.
Right, I think it was. I just think that the standards are higher here, and the players understand that and expect that. I think the players are a little aggravated with whether it be the booing or we've talked at length and it's been a topic over the years here that not cheering at the appropriate times or too quiet when the Patriots are on defense. And yeah, I think the players are aware of that and are noting that. What the solution is, I don't know. There's just a high standard here, and the fans come to expect good performances. And like I said, this isn't baseball where there's a game every single day through the summer. You can come right back at it the next day. I mean, fans who are here on Sunday, they've got a month before they're back, another home game, and you know, you expect a certain level of performance, and it wasn't delivered. And, you know, like I said earlier, unless and until it becomes a trend here where they lose by 25 points to inferior opponents, you can chalk it up to one bad day and give this team the benefit of the doubt that, as they have in the past, they make the adjustments and they come back and are back on all cylinders the next time out. Maybe this team is different. Maybe this team doesn't have the same kind of guys and the same horses, and they don't have the same talents. And it could spiral downward this year. That's possible. I'm not saying that it's going to all magically come back to normal in 2 weeks. But let's give it a little time before and see if this is a trend where the performances are going to be subpar.
Howard writes, I do think the fans have become spoiled. I know my 13-year-old is spoiled, as he has been only following them for 5 or 6 years now and has only known a winning Patriots organization. I've been a fan since the early to mid-70s when Jim Plunkett was the quarterback. Am I spoiled? Probably a little, in that I expect them to win every game they go into, but fully understand that the opposing team gets paid to make plays too and is trying to win and may actually outplay the Pats on any given Sunday. However, what happened on Sunday was totally uncharacteristic of the quality of product that I've come to expect from the Patriots. Perhaps that is why I am spoiled, because Mr. Kraft and Coach Belichick have built a product that is consistently of the highest quality, and when that product is anything but the highest quality, I am first shocked and then disappointed.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about it. This truly was one of the more stunning regular season losses that I could remember. Because think about everything. Think about some of the big
regular season losses. It felt like it hit you in the solar plexus, didn't it? Just took the wind right out of you.
Think about some of the big losses that they've had. Obviously, 2003, the opening game against Buffalo, stands out. But here's the thing. That was A, a road game. B, it was against a team that, at that point, going into the season, was considered a leading contender to maybe even go into the Super Bowl. Drew Bledsoe, they had some renewed energy. That was a good team they played on the road, and we know some of the other circumstances with Lawyer Malloy and all that. That was a major loss that was stunning in the way it happened. And think about some of the other losses that they had. Pittsburgh in 2004 to end their long win streak. That was against a good team on the road, and granted they got blown out. They didn't have Corey Dillon that day. Think about some of the other losses that they had. That game against the Monday night game against Miami a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. That was more of a fluky late season, anything kind of happens on the road kind of loss. The bottom line is this game was against a terrible team, or so we thought going in. It was at home, and the Patriots were coming off of one of the more emotionally satisfying wins they maybe have ever had in the regular season. You add all that together, and that's what makes this loss so stunning. They're going to lose games this year, and maybe they're going to get blown out again once or twice. But to that team, at home, and by that margin, is what's so stunning. And, you know, I just think you can look at it as just one loss, and that's end of story. That is what it is, whether they lost by one or by, you know, 25. It was just one loss. But I think that's what fans are thinking about here is the magnitude of this loss is a regular season loss. We've never seen anything like this, I don't think, a loss like this. So we maybe don't know how this team's going to react, because even when they've lost in the past, it's been against a good team, maybe on the road. It hasn't been to a seemingly awful team at home by this kind of margin. So there's a little bit of uncertainty there, because how are they going to react? We don't have a backlog of games like this where they've overcome a loss like this and come back and done well. We
true.
Don't know.
That's true. He continues by saying, as for the booing, I fully understand why they did it, and I probably would have done it myself, because that performance was abysmal. Hopefully it will stimulate the coaches and players to refocus their efforts and work harder to be sure that result doesn't happen again. As for what I would shake up, well, my thought is twofold. One, demote Dean Pease to secondary coach and promote Dom Capers to defensive coordinator. Number two, demote Castle to backup and let the rookie and probably the future Brady replacement, O'Connell, take the reins and learn from real game experience. Now, that would be a shakeup of monumental proportions.
That would be. I mean, the coaching one is a creative thought, one that I hadn't thought of to this point. And, you know, I don't know, you know, the inner workings of how they operate down there. You know, Dean Pease is the defensive coordinator. I do think that Dom Capers and his experience as a coordinator and head coach, he's probably more involved, probably, I don't know for sure, probably more involved in other elements of the defense and the overall game planning than your ordinary secondary coach
you'd
might be.
You'd be stupid not to take advantage of a guy with his expertise. Right. So I'm sure Coach Pease is leaning on that fairly heavily.
Right. So, you know, basically, I don't think you need a shakeup like that because I don't know if that does much. It's not, you know, I think they're all sort of involved in the game planning and hey, maybe even the defensive play calling for all we know. But again, like a lot of other situations here where we talk about this one game, you know, Dean Pease overall has done a pretty decent job as the defensive coordinator. He's gotten a lot of credit for when they've had a very successful defensive game plan. Let's not rush after this one game to say that the defensive coordinator is the problem here. I don't think. As far as the quarterback shakeup, you know, I don't know if Kevin O'Connell is the future here. I happen to think that Tom Brady is still the future here. So I don't think it's going to be a situation where, hey, this season's going down.
I think for the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, certainly, anyway.
Right. But by that point, Kevin O'Connell's a free agent, yeah. And maybe he's not. Maybe his future is in the NFL.
Just like Castle is next year.
Right. We're getting way over. Yeah. Well, exactly. And that's another thing where, you know, Matt Castle is probably not going to be here next year.
Right.
Regardless.
I don't think there's a chance in hell that he's
here next year. Regardless of how things go. If this season goes down the tubes and Matt Castle doesn't do well, he's a free agent, and they're probably not bringing him back because he didn't perform well. If the season is a great success, then
somebody else is going to hire him.
Somebody else is going to take him.
For bigger money than the Patriots would be willing to give him. Yes.
And everybody will go home happy.
Right.
I don't think Kevin O'Connell is – we're going to see Kevin O'Connell if the Patriots are 3-7 or 3-8
and it's
pretty much over.
Right.
We're not going to see Kevin O'Connell getting starts anytime soon. He's going to get a little bit of action at the end of lopsided games like we saw the other day.
Right.
We are not going to see a shakeup like that. It's one thing for an Atlanta Falcons team to have Matt Ryan enter the season as your starting quarterback. It's one thing for Baltimore Ravens to have Joe Flacco, a guy who, you know, and you know, they decided that these guys are going to be their starting quarterbacks at least a few weeks before the season started, if not earlier. Kevin O'Connell, up until 2 weeks ago, was taking snaps as the third or fourth string quarterback. If Matt Castle is struggling with some of these guys, having at least gotten some first string reps in training camp and during practice, and he isn't getting it done, I think it's too early to think that Kevin O'Connell will be able to do it.
Jack sends an email by saying, "We all have a tendency to glance over events that don't make or break the win, but let's talk about the awful call on Castle. Per usual, there seems to be two sets of rules, one for the NFL and one for the Patriots. He got away, he ran in for a touchdown, and then was called dead, and soon as he was grabbed, what? Oh, so the rule is, as soon as you're grabbed by a defensive player behind the line of scrimmage, you're ruled down, right? Well, if that's the case, then I guess we should have won the Super Bowl because Eli looked pretty wrapped up to me, but still got a pass off. Shouldn't he have been ruled down?
Should he? You know, I mean, I don't think it was a good call. But bottom line is, anything that's close is going to go in favor of the quarterback. And
it is true. It is true when you compare that to what happened to Eli Manning in the Super Bowl. They were both pretty similar plays.
That is good. Now, that's not a bad point. And you know, it is a judgment call. And I think the bottom line is referees, I think, are instructed.
It.
Yeah. Exactly. This referee thought he was dead. You know, you don't know that he's going to run all the way in for the touchdown. I mean, the call came whenever the call came.
I think he ran into the touchdown because the whistle had been blown and gave up.
Well, exactly. So you don't know what the quarterback was going to do. The referees, I think, are instructed to err on the side of caution toward the quarterback. And if the quarterback's ruled down, they don't want to let the defenders let the whistle keep going and let the defenders really throw the quarterback down to the ground and pummel him. They're gonna call it early.
Right.
But it's a good point, the Eli Manning play. It's a good point.
Let's talk about Ricky Williams' cheap hits. So they already had the game wrapped up. So does that make it okay to ignore illegal blocks below the knee? I don't even know what he's talking about because I don't think I saw it.
Well, the Ronnie Brown 62-yard touchdown run where Mike Vrabel was chasing after Ronnie Brown. And
he got low cut.
I didn't think it was, I didn't think it was necessarily a local. I mean, I think it was two guys. You know, I think Ricky Williams is still trying to block Mike Vrabel away from the play if there's a chance that he can get after Ronnie Brown. I don't think it was it was necessarily a dirty play by Ricky Williams. Some of the Patriots players thought otherwise, but even Ricky Williams kind of apologized after the game.
I think
for
he did. Yeah.
He did, but I think he also said, I don't think it was a dirty play, but I'm sorry they feel that way. I'm sorry that I certainly didn't mean to inflict any injury.
He says, I'm just sick about the game on Sunday, but not for the reasons most are. I am outraged that the refs can ignore hits like that. As far as the game, well, it stunk, but hey, it was one game. One game. Okay. John, a lot of Jackson Johns today. John says, fans who booed, embarrassing. Players that complained about the fans who booed should be embarrassed.
The player should be, yeah. Well, I don't think there's anything good to come out of a player. I don't think a player should be acknowledging the boos, even let alone criticizing the players, criticizing the fans. I would keep my mouth shut. But I think it's a little bit of a level of frustration that might be built up from even beyond Saturday or even beyond Sunday. That just sort of came out at this point. I mean, Ellis Hobbs is certainly a guy who freely speaks his opinion, and obviously he and some of his teammates are frustrated. It would be my advice to them to not address this sort of topic. I don't think anything good can come out of it.
I'm trying to understand what the context was of the entire line of questioning. Anyway,
I don't know the answer
because
to that.
I believe that the media actually asked, and I don't think the players brought this up on their own.
Of course not.
I think this was a question that was manufactured by the media. I'm not now. That's in Ellis Hobbs's case. In Benjamin Watson's case. I believe he made a comment after he observed the fans leaving early in the fourth quarter.
He made a comment on his radio.
I believe so.
I think it was on a radio show.
Yeah.
I don't know what the line of questioning was. I wasn't listening. I didn't hear either one of them. I think you're right, though, at least in Ellis Hobbs' case. I don't think Ellis –
He was responding to a question asked of him.
Exactly, and I know the type of setting. It was in the locker room yesterday where player's available at his locker, and he doesn't give an opening monologue, for instance. He fields questions, and I'm sure it was a question from a member of the media. Did you notice – the fans booing. Did you notice the fans leaving? And what was your, what were you thinking at the time? And he answered that question. I guess honestly. And as for Watson, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he brought that up or the questioner did.
I'm not entirely certain under the context, so it's
kind
of hard for me to attack it a little bit. But fact is, though, is that the players that complained about the fans who booed, I don't know if embarrassed is the right word, but let's just say they should probably refocus.
Yeah, that would probably be safe. That's a good call.
Yeah,
that's where they should die.
Well, speaking of refocusing, then I mean that's what this team is going to be doing, I think, for the remainder of this week.
Yeah, this is usually the bye week or the week leading up to the weekend off is the time to get back to a little bit of fundamentals in general and maybe some specific areas that they want to work on in general. Whereas next week is more focused towards game planning for San Francisco. So whenever your bye week falls, that first week is sort of a non-game plan week where you're just getting back to some of the basics, refining a few areas, and then next week they'll get heavier into San Fran. But they've got a lot of areas to work at. Steven Gostkowski could maybe take a practice or two off and be fine. But the rest of this team,
I think he's the only part of this entire team that you can't really make a legitimate claim against right now.
No, and that's the problem. There's really no glaring.
He's got a franchise record best percentage for successful kicks
over
his career.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's well over 90%, I believe, in field goals.
Yeah. He, he hasn't missed many. He hasn't been tested too much from beyond 40, 45, 50 yards. But, he's really, as far as filling the shoes of an Adam Vinatieri, you can't ask.
Oh, more than you could ask of anybody trying to replace a quote-unquote legend.
Right. And
plus, the fact is that you have to realize that his field position kicking last week against the Jets had a major hand in their winning that football game.
No question about it. That's been huge, and they didn't have that necessarily with Vinatieri. That's been huge for them.
Yeah. So it's a refocusing this week, if you will, then, for the team. And like I said on this program, at least inside the playbook, the next couple of days that we're here, we're going to not only, you know, look at what's happening news-wise with the Patriots, but I want to also take just a little time to look at the rest of their opponents, mm-hmm. look what's happening on down the schedule, certainly look at some of the divisional teams.
Will Lane Kiffin be the coach of the Raiders in December?
Well, we don't know
in
that.
In October.
It could very well be a former Patriot assistant as the head coach of the Raiders.
That's right.
You know, and Rob Ryan, if the rumors are correct about that, by the time the Patriots get to them in December. Also want to take a look at the great start, I think, by the Buffalo Bills, yeah. You know, because, you know, frankly, you know, they've been in some close games, but, you know, they found a way to get over the hump. So I think that's significant. Mm-hmm. John in South Carolina sends another note. Another John today.
Yeah,
I think we've set a record for Johns today. Johns and Jacks. He says
John Hanna check in too?
Yeah, he did check in with he checked in with this a little bit earlier, didn't he, Gary?
Hey, I'm okay.
I live in South Carolina now, and I have not gone to a game in the new stadium. Is it slow, or is it as slow leaving Gillette as it is leaving the old stadium? If so, I don't fault the people who leave early as much.
people don't leave. I personally don't think a huge percentage of fans who come here leave early because of the traffic. If it's a good game, you're leaving early if you're not satisfied with the game. I don't think you're leaving early because of the traffic. That being said, I think it is kind of slow.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Thank you, Eddie Mac.
That's just it. That's just it.
No, I would agree. I think it's still slow getting out. It's not as bad as it was with the old stadium because they've got different routes to direct you, and you're moving a little bit more. You're not sitting in one spot as much.
Right.
But, you know, hey, if you're lucky enough to have one of those backdoor passes that gets you through, you know, Foxborough, then you're a lucky person indeed. But
absolutely.
You know, I'm not privy to that kind of information. Or
no, you
got
to talk to your boss
yeah,
get one of those.
I suppose. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So tell us what's coming up, Patriots today.
Patriots today. You know, still today, rehashing some of the nonsense that took place on Sunday for this team, and talking a little bit also about the Hall of Fame, a big weekend that we had here over the weekend.
Right.
You know, we're still focused on that game. We got 2 weeks to analyze and dissect that game. We're continuing to do that. And then we'll get deeper into San Fran. But, Patriots Today coming up later on just a little bit on Patriots.com.
I'll see. There you go. And what about fantasy lowdown? Are you helping people out with their fantasy picks?
I'm probably helping people out more than I'm helping myself because my teams haven't been doing too well. But, no, we've had a couple of good shows so far on the fantasy lowdown and another one coming up on Thursday. Send in your questions. It's not too early. It's never too late to send in your questions.
If Fred doesn't biff them in the email.
That's right. At webradio@patriots.com. But we've had a lot of fun on the show and batting around, you know, who to sit, who to start. Now, the added wrinkle is bye week starting up this week, so that causes a lot of commotion for fantasy owners worldwide. So we're here to help.
Well, you mentioned all of the Hall of Fame festivities this last weekend, which was a blast to be a part of. And Brian Morey, who, of course, is the executive director of the Hall at Patriot Place, and his program Inside the Hall with Andre Tippett and Brian Morey is coming up next.
Yo, I got to tell you guys, I can't wait for 2 weeks of Patriots Today breaking down Sunday's game.
Okay,
jeez, you gotta be kidding me.
We'll change.
Can we break down week two's game over the Jets or something?
we'll change things up next Monday and start gearing toward
the Patriots even show up for that game?
No.
But we did. Patriots Today did, and we're analyzing the game.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, we showed up.
No, that's good. Now you got to break down the losses.
It's an opportunity to watch Christina too. So,
good point.
See, thank you.
And it's also a chance to look at how the Patriots can get better. Maybe Patriots Today, with all their film study, can discover ways in which the Patriots can improve.
Cherry pie?
pass that along to Coach Belichick.
That's right. He wants to see Brian Lowe breaking down cover two and the three techniques.
You know what? Go over to the Hall. Check out the playbook, the breakdowns, breakdowns. Maybe pick up a couple things that you can use when you're breaking down film for Patriots Today.
And partake it and give it off to the fans.
They'll enjoy
that.
How's the first couple of days been since doors have opened?
Good. Pretty steady. Yesterday was a good day. Today has been a little slower, but good. The feedback over there has been tremendous. We have some exit surveys going on today and for the next couple of weeks. And it's been the feedback has been incredibly positive. We're working into it here. We started on a Monday, you know, working up toward the weekend here. We expect a nice crush this weekend. So you've been in. I mean, what'd you think of it, John?
I only got to see it for about 2 minutes while I was in there on Saturday. So I realized when I first got in there, Brian, I said, oh, I need a couple of hours.
It's a special.
So I want to ask you right here, right now, can I get like a pass to get in there? do I need to shell out my $10?
$10. No, we'll get you in. We'll get you in, John.
I'll walk you through.
Gary will walk
you. You're one of the MCs. Yeah, marketing, they think they run the joint over there.
Marketing does run the joint.
Yeah.
Basically. I want to spend some time in there. When I go in, I don't want to just blow in in and blow out. I want to spend
and
some
you
time.
Know what?
Because that's what I'm told, you know, when you come and you want to visit, make sure you give yourself at least an hour, if not a little bit more, just so you can appreciate some of the things that are there.
And I think that when, you know, if you're a casual fan, I just went over there and I was upstairs on the floor and I approached a couple of people to ask them what they think. And they were gushing. And the guy says, and I'm not even a football fan. So it's the type of place where even you don't have to be hardcore to go in there and enjoy yourself, because you're seeing some things that you wouldn't normally get to see. Even as a casual type football fan, you go in there and there's so many interesting elements in the interactives and the inside the game, listening to the huddle conversation, things like that, that you don't really have to be a hardcore fan to find to be pretty cool. And I think that's the joy of it. Like I said, I mean, the feedback has been excellent. Bilo, what do you think?
I'll tell you what, it is a spectacle. And like John said, you can't just go in there and think, I'm just going to take a casual look around. What you get out of Bill Belichick in some of these segments too, and I, you know, you've been a part, you Brian, I saw you as being a part of some of the putting some of the stuff together, seeing some of the behind the scenes stuff, and seeing the final product is really spectacular. And you get the Patriots element, you get the, you know, I know you got the New England football area as well, and really some great interactive element. It's a spectacle. It's so unique. I mean, you know, you've been to a Hall of Fame, like a Pro Football Hall of Fame or a Cooperstown.
Nothing like it.
But this is interactive and all about the Patriots, and it was a great weekend with the, inducting and reinducting all these
that
guys.
That was fun,
too.
By the way.
And I got to say this. You know, I worked at Patriots Football Weekly for 8.5 years. And just rejoined the organization in December. And I've had a chance to work with so many different people on a different level than what I did previously here.
Right.
And I am amazed by the people in this organization and how well they execute. I mean, things, you know, it was pretty tight last week getting that building ready for Thursday. I mean, we were probably in there Thursday morning putting the finishing touches for a 1:30 ribbon cutting.
Right.
And to watch the people that have contributed and help out. And I mean, if John, you were here this weekend. I mean, I don't think anyone would have possibly known the hectic schedule that people operated under, the pressure that people executed under. I mean, I thought everything went so smoothly because of so many people. And it really is a credit to so many people in this organization that have experience putting together these events. A lot of this is very new for me. I'm learning on the fly. I was a journalist, you know, and I'm just amazed by how well people in this organization do their jobs. I shouldn't be amazed, you know, because it's obvious that they pull stuff off all the time here. But, you know, it's not just the football team that's committed to excellence here.
So the bottom line, the lesson to be learned is, all is not lost if you start your career as a journalist.
I'm actually glad to know that.
is that the bottom line?
Well, you got to be pretty lucky, I guess. Otherwise, like I was.
I'm very glad to know
Well done,
that.
Brian. Well done.
Because if there was some kind of, I don't know.
Good move. Good move, Brian.
Inside the Hall with Andre Tippett and Brian Morey is coming up next. And we'll be back with more Inside the Playbook, Patriots Playbook. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, manana.